Hi, I'm Stargate Pioneer.
And I'm Steven Jondrew, and we're from Better Podcasting, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of the individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hi, this is Jeremy Raddick. I was Gareth in the Doctor Who TV movie, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. We invite you to join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi and beyond. Your GPR staff are Jay Witten.
You see how clever I was there? You make that connection? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Keir Hansen.
Proactive. Reactive. Proactive. I'm making up words as I go here.
And Haley Malley.
Hey, that wasn't exactly what I was going to say at all, Jay. Thanks.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do occasionally discuss recent news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired in their home territories. But don't worry. If we dip too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning.
Welcome to episode 245 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where all the company dancers have the most impressive collars. The fly rigging involves repulsor lift technology, and the lighting designer was probably wanted in 4 systems for laser crimes.
Pew, pew, pew.
I am Jay with me in the GPR studios, and with me this week is Keir. How are you doing, Keir?
I feel great this evening. Let me tell you all about it in song.
and doing her rendition of Do Re Mi over in the corner is Haley. How are you doing?
I don't sing.
She made that outfit out of her curtains.
And joining us this week, because he had the exact lack of shame that we possess, is fellow podcaster from the Coal Hill AV Club, Andy Hicks. Welcome out, Andy.
Hi, I'm incredibly happy to be here and honored to be on Gallifrey Public Radio.
It's like a WKRP jingle, only not really as catchy.
Exactly, yeah.
What's going on this week, Haley?
Well, this week we feel like taking it in the West End, or if you please, right up Broadway. As we think about this quirky little show we love so much and look at the weeks upon weeks upon weeks we have to go until the Christmas episode. And, well, you know us, our minds begin to wander. What would the show be like if, like Scooby-Doo or the Monkees or the occasional Flash Supergirl crossover, the characters decided to randomly break out into song?
So we kept this kind of shtum for a while because I didn't really know exactly how we were going to approach this. But then I decided, you know what, the hell with it. We're just going to go at it in a very simple manner. We get emotionally invested. We have a lot of feels about this program. So I figured, why don't we just grab that and ride it for all it's worth. So you choose an iconic, emotionally charged moment from any episode of Doctor Who that springs to mind. Think to yourself, if this were a musical, who would suddenly be stepping forward into the limelight as the music starts up and their number begins? And as they begin, what is the song? What is the style of the song? And if you take it to the point where it's actually a parody of an existing song, give us a lyric from it, if you would be so bold. That's not a requirement. I'd just be really impressed if you did. So I'm going to throw this all around the room. Anybody who wants to jump on this, because we prepared a few just to kind of see where we'd go with this. We each have our own particular, as the French would say, I don't know what to put into this. So who wants to grab the first, the opening number, the on-track, so to speak?
Okay.
Well, I think I should go first because I took the first episode of the relaunched Doctor Who, Rose.
Okay.
And I decided that when we first see Auton Mickey, he was going to break out into Barbie Girl.
but with a true block accent. The backing dancers are going to be in perfect synchronicity. Yeah. You realize their moves, you know, are just going to be so solid. The robot.
Spot on.
Oh. Exactly. And they're all controlled by the same thing. So it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
No need for choreography.
Bluetooth technology has them perfectly in sync. All right, Jay, you got one for us?
Oh, sure. So trying to get into the feel of things, I didn't so much come up with a song that would work really well, like being sung throughout,
yeah,
but more of a scene that just almost would work as a music video kind of thing.
Yeah.
So like somebody singing in the background while something's going on. And I'm thinking the scene specifically where Clara takes a raven to the chest.
Oh.
I'm imagining like some kind of 80s power ballad, like Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
Every crow has its beak.
Every crow has its beak.
Yeah, it does. Oh,
just my like God. Can you
see Capaldi like with the headband?
Yes.
Wearing the Brett Michaels headband.
Just like every Moffat season has a slightly disappointing
sexist
ending.
Joke.
Yeah.
Has an episode that is weak.
Every crow has its beak.
It does.
Hang on a second. All
right. Solo played with the Sonic sunglasses on. All right. Andy, what do you got for us?
Oh. Every crow has its beak.
Yes, right, it's no. become memorable.
Anyway, what do I have? I sort of accidentally came up with a few, and the one that pops into mind from recent times here on Doctor Who is the Doctor falls. All right, so the Doctor's given his impassioned speech about doing what he does because it's right, because it's decent, and because it's kind, and he's talking to Missy and the Master, and he's trying to get them both on his side and get them both to listen. And it is so stark and impassioned. And there's no background music in that scene. It is wonderful. And the Master looks at him and says, "I wasn't listening to a word you just said." And they walk away. And instead of walking away, the Doctor saying, "Without hope, without witness, without reward," he jumps in with, "What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding?" Just the entire song. Just sings that song.
Okay.
Just start to finish. It would be so emotional. Actually, that would, you know, we're talking about things that would be kind of funny, too. That would actually be really emotionally powerful. And Capaldi could sing the hell out of it, I think. Yeah.
He would have to do it without accompaniment, doing it al Capaldi. If you will.
Capaldi.
Acapaldi.
Yep.
It's a Scottish term.
Yeah.
I went a little old school for my first one. Staying in that emotional vein, I went back to the Hand of Fear.
Yeah.
So that Sarah Jane steps out of the TARDIS, finding herself on Southview Road, her home, being carefully dropped off by the Fourth Doctor. And after hearing the last words he said to her, she leans back for one last time against the beloved blue box. And she uses those final words as the start of her call to arms number, "Until we meet again, Sarah." And it starts as this wistful reminiscence of her adventures that have just come to a close. But the lyrics begin to build over the course of the second and third verse until it becomes this determination number that she's going to be carrying on the fight on the home front, and ends with her vowing to take on her own adventures in true form, with her sonic lipstick held aloft in the final strains. So,
and she kind of looks like the Hamilton logo a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, that's a first act ender right there. The whole second act is just the Sarah Jane adventures, and it kind of falls off the rails at that point.
There's a whole thing with the Mona Lisa lady. It's just, it doesn't work. It's kind of like, it's a bit,
All right. Haley, back in your court.
Okay, I don't know when, what scene exactly this would happen in, but I feel like at some point in the Almost People, it should be Thriller. And just the whole song, whole choreography, everything.
Nice. Totally.
No. Come on. Oxygen would be the perfect time for that. You got space zombies.
Yes.
Yeah, that might have been better.
That's true.
Thanks for the note.
It's like just tromping down the hallway with Bill at the fore, doing the entire dance.
Yeah, the suits are doing all the work, really.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah.
I guess you could save on the choreographer. All you need is just a good programmer.
Again, good Bluetooth.
Just telling you.
One of the things that we do on Coal Hill AV Club, plug my podcast, is we'll occasionally do song parodies and we'll do kind of opening sketches and crazy things. And for Oxygen, this is the infamous lost song parody. This one never actually made it to air because we couldn't figure out a way to sing it and make it work. But my colleague and friend Stephen Webb actually wrote a parody of the most obvious song from the 80s for Oxygen, which is they blinded me with science. Oh. Yeah, me and Bill have an alliance. They blinded me with science, and we couldn't make it work in the recording, but it was pretty wonderful.
I don't even think karaoke could carry you through that one. That's
no, it was tough. Yeah.
All right, Jay, what do you got for your round two?
So I decided to go back into the classic era, and as much as it might be a sore subject for a lot of people, the twin dilemma, specifically the scene where World 60 decides to start choking out Perry, he goes on his little tirade beforehand, and I was thinking, that seems like it would be the perfect chance for him to just add some lyrics to that, or just put some music behind it, whatever. And the song that kept coming to mind was from a Phantom of the Opera, the Down Once More. Just that real powerful, I'm totally dedicated to this, and I'm going to strangle the living crap out of you while I'm hitting those high notes.
Wow. Okay. That's really fun. Why is it that, all right, Phantom kept coming to mind with me too, but it kept coming to mind with me with Caves of Androzani. And I think it was just kind of because of the overall look of of the story.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It just kind of had that feel to it. And I just kept thinking that there were ways to be able to fit that in, especially as he's smacking Fifth around. There's a lot of backhands and things. It just felt like it had that kind of Victorian feel. Anyway.
Right.
All right, Andy.
So the original pitch, I think, that Keir told me about was sort of the idea of, all right, so what if Doctor Who had musical numbers and almost sort of like a Josie and the Pussycats, Scooby-Doo kind of vibe? Mm-hmm. And the first thing that just popped into mind was going back, again, old school, and this would be it's the Happiness Patrol, right? And there's the Doctor and Ace and Trevor Sigma with the harmonica there, and they're in the Candyman's kitchen, and the Candyman just starts chasing him, and then apropos of absolutely nothing, and by the way, you're watching the episode as it airs. It is a live action episode, except all of a sudden it turns on a dime and suddenly becomes really bad Hanna-Barbera animation, and the Candyman is chasing them around town to Sugar Sugar by the Archies. No explanation. It's just a wacky, hijinksy kind of Hanna-Barbera type chase. He pops up over here. Oh no, he was really the ghost the whole time. Like it's just stupid and silly the whole time.
A hallway with 12 doors for no reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Jump and it's popping really out of barrels. There barrels that weren't in the scene before. Suddenly people are in barrels. They're leaping out of barrels. Whoop.
Yep. They pop up, and all of a sudden, Ace has the tambourine, and the Doc has the the keyboard.
You started sharing
and
that
on drums.
Drums, exactly.
You started sharing that thought with me, and I immediately started thinking about dream casting, about what you would do from the Doctor Who pantheon for casting. I ran with both Josie and the Pussycats, and I ran with the Scooby-Doo gang about who would be into those roles. And I mean, Rory as Shaggy was kind of a given, but then from there, you just had to kind of figure out where you would. I mean, Daphne is kind of a tough call. It depends on how much respect you actually have for Daphne.
Yeah.
Mel?
Polly. Daphne is Polly. I'm not wrong. Yeah.
Or Victoria.
Yeah. Victoria.
Or Amy.
Right. Yeah, Amy Pond sort of makes sense because the ginger.
Yeah.
But as far as attitude.
I would definitely, I'd absolutely put Bill as Velma, though, because she's
Osgood.
By far one of the smartest companions.
Osgood.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
You got to go Osgood there.
You kind of have to. I mean, Ingrid Oliver was kind of boring to play Velma.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Ingrid. I'm so sorry. No, I'm not sorry. I love Velma. God damn it. No, I'm standing behind that. Yeah. I mean, harumph.
Jinkies, all right. Doctor.
All right. So
well,
I went
Scooby,
with...
who's Scooby then? We need to answer who Scooby is.
Oh,
and I don't,
Mickey.
Mickey. No. Oh, he's the tin dog. Oh, Poor Mickey. Look.
Scooby never saved the world with a big orange truck.
No.
All right. I decided to
Adric
to
is jump Scrappy. Back to... Continue.
No, Scrappy dude would have to be either Angie or Arnie.
Oh God.
The Maitland Duggins.
No, Duggins no. Not Scrappy.
We like Duggan.
Duggan deserves more respect than Scrappy do. Duggan needs to be like the sheriff in town who's just there to help.
Yeah, exactly. He's the inspector guy.
All right. I went to Last of the Time Lords. So Martha is confronting Ten on her decision. She has said her piece. She has explained that she has found the true value and the purpose that she knows that she has on Earth in her time, and she makes her exit. And as she steps out of the TARDIS, she walks into the circle of a single street lamp. I mean, shut up. I know the scene happened during the day, but whatever. Just roll with me here. It's theater, damn it. And she begins one of the most empowering sort of a I can do better than him number that you've ever heard. And you know that Freeman could kill it. You know she could. She'd suddenly like channel her inner Beyonce and just lay it all out. That's my take.
I could see that. Could totally see that.
Yep.
I'm going for the feels on my own. All right, Haley, we're back to you to do something to take us away from anything.
Well, I'm staying in Last of the Time Lords.
Oh,
nice. And I've decided that Lucy Saxon, on being confronted with why she's with this psychopath, is going to break out into Stand By Your Man.
Oh, no! I could say so many things right now, but I'm not gonna.
Yeesh.
Damn.
Oh, man.
Just gonna let that hang out there for a little while. So, Jay,
really,
what do you got?
Not much we can say. So I realize that I'm kind of cheating going this route, but I couldn't help it because it just seems so absolutely perfect. I'm thinking 11th hour when the I can't figure out exactly when it would happen, either during the part where he's like going through his clothes, getting dressed as we're leading up to the big I am the doctor speech or whatever, or if it needs to be like right after he... I don't know, somewhere in the 11th hour, during 11's introduction, there needs to be a giant, like, the whole town breaking out into an explanation of who the Doctor is, a la the main theme from Galavant.
Oh, okay. The main theme from Galavant. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so you're proposing basically an original song, Jay. Let's hear the lyrics.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We'll get back to that in the comments for this episode. I could probably run without it.
It would start like that and then just get into it. Would resolve, but there'd be sort of an adventure-y kind of
there.
Yeah,
yes, yes, he'd have to start exactly with something that gives him a sense of, you know, of riding, of purpose, of challenging forward, of going up against Prisoner Zero, and then once the backing singers come into it, it all falls apart to
ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba. Hey, exactly. Right. Kira, you appear to be saying something or about to say
this is all you.
Okay. So this is actually inspired by something that I did at Chicago TARDIS back in 2015. And they had just shown Heaven Sent on the big screen. And anyone who was there, you know, it was just the most amazing, like, fandom moment of all time ever. We're there, big room full of nerds. They're showing the best episode of the new series, in my humble opinion, and many others as well. Up on the big screen, we're watching this thing, and it's just like, oh my God, Gallifrey, what? You know, at the end, and just this massive wah kind of thing. Immediately after they showed the episode, they had karaoke, and I happened to be dressed as the 12th Doctor, you know, full cosplay thing going on. So go to karaoke, and I'm like, there's only one song I can sing to fully encapsulate the essence of what happened to the 12th Doctor in that story, having to go through the same thing over and over and over again. But every time he was brought to his knees and forced to regenerate again, he would have to go through the entire cycle one more time. And he would just keep punching away at that wall and just keep, you know, his determination to keep going. I think at some point during that episode, perhaps even under the, you know, final Shepherd's Boy monologue where he's punching the thing and the Death Shroud is behind him, I think he launches in to Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba.
Yes.
Because he gets knocked down. and then he gets back up again. Ain't no one going to keep him down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. So I'm up there in my cosplay, at karaoke, singing this song. It is the one time in my life I've ever been cool.
And for the rest of the night, people bought him cider drinks and a lager drink.
And whiskey
and
drinks.
A whiskey drink and a vodka drink.
And lager drinks and vodka drinks. And that song reminded us of the good times and, in fact, the best times, folks, let me tell you.
Very true. So, yeah. Well, nice. We were pissing the night away. So I thought about Journey's End. Mm. And I thought about the fact that after getting the full explanation of the Metacrisis Doctor from, well, the Metacrisis Doctor, Donna has to step back for a second and process the sheer insanity of what she's just been told. That certain components of her have been absorbed into him, that he has taken on a human manifestation as a result of this sort of this DNA crossover. And it's not only, well, her number that follows, which is simply titled Oi Spaceman, is not only Donna in true Donna form, it's her processing the doctor's keen observation as he calls out to her that she never knows her own true value. And that all of her shouting at the world in anger that she does only really comes from her not realizing her own importance, which she has just demonstrated in saving the universe. So I'm not really sure how that flip happens mid-number, but Oi Spaceman turns into something that's really neither about Oi or Spaceman. It's all about Donna herself. There's very little Oi in it by the time it ends.
Nice.
We had contributions where we thought this was going to be a prattle number because it was Journey's End. There were all these other characters. So there was going to be like this prattle sequence where Jack was off doing his stupid thing and the number kept sort of interfering. But I thought, no, Donna needs this one on her own.
Nice.
Journey's End would definitely be one of those kind of Weber musical kind of things where there's all of the concurrent song work going on and all the little lyrical play.
Oh,
but
yeah.
This one stands alone.
That's just Donna's. No, that would be wonderful. Actually, yeah. If I think, you know, if you were going to take a Doctor Who episode from, especially from the modern series, and just say, we're staging this as a musical, it's got to be Journey's End, Stolen Earth. You absolutely have to. And you're right. It totally, in addition to the Oi Spaceman number that Donna sings, brings the house down, it lends itself to a One Day More style, like overlapping kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So well, just like so totally well. I would pay money to see that.
Cause I would say at its peak, between those two episodes, you've got moments where you have four action sequences going on concurrently, four set locations.
Yep.
So that lends itself to that sort of, pattern banter number perfectly. I might have to sit down and actually put pen to paper on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andy, I'll call you later.
Nice.
All right. Haley, you got one more for the round, or are you tapped out?
Yep. I can do one more.
All right.
Okay. So we're in Doomsday. Rose is on the other Earth, and the Doctor is saying his final farewells. Rose Tyler. Bye, bye, bye.
Oh.
Oh, no.
That means I get to delete the heartfelt number I had here. Which was their duet from either side of the wall where neither of them could hear each other's lyrics. It was very Last 5 Years, for those of you who are at all familiar with that song cycle. I mean, total like timelines not crossing kind of thing. And no, ooh. All right, I'm walking away from mine. I'm just going to hit delete, so I have nothing for this round.
Were this a video game podcast, I should tell you that I came up with an idea somebody else is going to have to write for a crossover, The Last 5 Years of Us.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's The Last 5 Years, but with zombies. Now, adapt and survive for the next 10 minutes.
So you only see him on the day when everything's it's outbreak day, and you see her as she's suffering from her final bite, and their timelines are in reverse. All right. For those of you unfamiliar with The Last 5 Years, it's a musical about divorce, where you see either side of the couple. You see him from day one, you see her from day whatever at the end of it all, and their songs track backward in time. So, or her, his songs go forward through the relationship and her songs back up until the day they first met. And the only time they sing a duet together is at their wedding, smack in the center of the show. Brilliant show. Please go find out all you can about it. But it is a time traveler show. So yeah. It's, we have to find a way to work this.
Right.
All right, Jay, you got something?
Yeah. So I started thinking Gallivant, it ran with it.
And
the obvious next choice is when, in school reunion, when, Rose and Sarah Jane meet, almost verbatim, they can sing, "I Don't Like You." you change one or two of the lyrics and it fits almost perfectly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how many different episodes could you fit, "Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better"?
Oh,
really? If we're going to reapply classics.
Most of
anything with the master in it, yes, is perfect.
Oh. Yeah,
or the master. So
the entirety of series 8 or season 8 with the third doctor. Yeah, it's every time the master pops up.
I almost thought in many of those multi doctor stories, I kept going to De La Soul's "Me, Myself, and I."
I wanted River and any version of the Master to do "The Boy Is Mine."
Didn't someone point out that the remastered Five Doctors, when the Fifth Doctor plays the harp to try to open up the place where Bruce is, you know, messing around with time there?
Yep.
In the remastered version, the music he plays is really similar to the backing track of that Boy's Mine.
I'm going to have to listen to it again. I've never picked up on that.
I haven't either, because I don't know if I've really watched the remastered version. That was in one of the About Time books. Like, they made a point of saying it sounds a lot like. It's like, that's
okay.
Interesting. Yeah.
Huh.
So I don't know.
Nothing new under the sun. And you got one more?
Yeah, I have. Kira, I was telling you this earlier, that when we were thinking about I was brainstorming some ideas, I accidentally wrote a whole parody that plopped out of my brain, right? And this is, I feel like this is more the theme music, if you will, for the beginning of season 19. This is Castor Valva, and we've just experienced everything that's just happened in Legopolis. And the doctor has just set up after regenerating from Tom Baker to Peter Davison. And suddenly you hear the new theme music and it goes like this. We built this city. We built this city on block transfer. Built this city. We built this city on block transfer. Oh, yeah. Say you don't know me, my pleasant open face. Say I'm too young to go across time and space. Knee deep in companions, Teague and Mr. Flight. Missa's a runaway, hope her dad's alright. It's Asher's Castor Valva hanging on the wall of nerds. Don't you remember, Doc? We built this city. We built this city from block transfer. We built this city. We built this city on block transfer. Built this city. We built this city on block transfer. Adric's always playing kinky bondage games. Master's always playing corny dress-up games. We don't want to die here, heading for our doom. We're heading for event one, Doc's in the zero room. Antigon reads instructions. Someone wrote to mess with her. Don't you remember, love? We built this city. Woo-hoo! We built this city on block transfer. etc.
I love it.
Upcoming album from Jefferson's Time Ship.
I apologize.
I think that is an excellent point to be able to stick a pin in this one. So this is anyway. This is our opportunity to say we apologize in advance for the album release, which will be closing before the end of 2017 is out. Yeah, that's what you get from Gallifrey the Musical. It's just a taste, just a taste. This is literally us just having maybe 5 days to say,
yep.
You know, I wonder. Now give us the rest of the year to fart around with
this
idea.
Who had 5 days? Because I was told earlier today exactly, to come up with a list.
Haley and I just got thrown into it at the end.
Yeah.
I remember an email saying, yeah, we're going to have you on
what
the show.
A producer.
I feel like Tira's had an idea all week. He just wanted to be the smart one, so he didn't tell anybody about it.
I had no idea. You know, I didn't write a song. Did you? All right.
I did.
Jay, shall we get to some news things that are newsworthy of news-like nature?
Anyway.
Yeah, let's talk news.
Where do you want to begin?
Well, seeing as the vast majority of our news for probably the next 2 years is going to revolve around our incoming doctor.
There's a new doctor?
Yeah, mention that.
Sorry. Was it spoilers? Sorry.
You probably hadn't heard about it. It's flew in under the radar. Jodie Whittaker actually spent some time on BBC Radio 6 this past week.
Okay.
So just
went interview through a full interview. I did get some synopsis of this, and it's really just a matter of if nothing else, if you just want some validation of the fact that she is prepared to take on the mantle and realizes the gravity of it and the stress that's being put upon her, then you can lead into this. This also really echoes pretty nicely with something that Sage Young from over at Head Over Feels and I were tweeting about a week or two ago, where we were kind of defending the courage that Jodie is demonstrating in terms of taking on the role. And actually, Sage got a lot of flack for saying, oh, you know, what courage is involved with somebody who's signing a multi-million dollar, million pound paycheck and blah, 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 blah. But you don't understand the fact that she's going to be under scrutiny for everything she does between now and the time she walks away from the show. So officially, at this point on, the paparazzi are going to be, especially, think about British tabloids and the relentlessness with which, I mean, look at the way they treated her the day that it was announced that she was going to be the 13th Doctor. And the first thing they did is said, let's find the dirtiest, dishiest things we can about her and publish that tomorrow. I mean, that's essentially what she's up against. So, I mean, yes, as far as a demonstration of courage for taking on a role that that has been as inflammatory in its casting, I mean, as far as to burn down the last vestiges of the kind of patriarchal gatekeeping fan base that's still there, from both the critics and the casual viewer. So yeah, I absolutely would think that this is a kind of a courageous and brave role to accept, and she touches upon that. So I'm really glad that they give her a chance to express that a bit.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like you said, you know, she is going to be under scrutiny in her personal life. And I mean, she's going to be the first female doctor. There are people that are like furious about this choice. So who are they going to take it out on but the person that has brought them such unhappiness? So even beyond the press, she's under fire from the fans as well. So yeah, absolutely. It takes courage.
I mean, it doesn't take much to look into any fan base and realize that there are a large number of individuals who have a really difficult time separating character from actor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's to people the line between fiction and nonfiction gets really blurry for a lot of individuals. So by that same token, you get individuals who say when there's a change to a story that they feel so, you know, identified or particular about, anything that potentially shakes that up now becomes a matter of I need to find a target for all of my anger. I need to vent at something. I need to rage against something because the BBC is an entity, and yes, it was their decision, or maybe it was Chris Chibnall's, or maybe it was a team of people, but I can't figure that out. I can point at one individual, though. Oh, I'm real good at pointing a single finger, so they're going to run with that.
Yeah. Well, One person that seems to be rather pleased with the casting is our ninth Doctor, Christopher Eccleston, who actually, in one of the more frequent, actually, talks about Doctor Who that he's been doing lately. He was asked what he thought about the new casting, and he, joking around, said, "I'm just delighted it wasn't Clive Anderson." But
okay.
He then went on to say that, you know, she's working class, she's northern, what can go wrong? You know, she's the female version of me. So
that's true. I mean, and it kind of follows suit with a lot of what a lot of the predecessor actors have said. In fact, pretty much almost unanimously, all the predecessor doctors have said where they're extremely pleased about the casting. They think it's going to be a tremendous move forward for the program. It's about time, and they're extremely eager to see what this is going to bring to the legacy of the show, as we all are. Now, I understand we've got some listeners that chime in to us on a regular basis to say they're really not certain about this. Thankfully, no one has really expressed to us that they're going to be walking away from the show, as you read some critics or whatever.
Yeah.
Never read the comments, but some people will say that they're going to make that kind of a decision. And fine, you know what? I would consider the fan base better for the shed layers, if you will, because that's a matter of you have to be. This is a program that is absolutely built upon a foundation of consummate change, from your lead characters to your supporting characters to storylines to premise to creators to showrunners to writers to directors. It is constantly in a state of flux. It has to be, because being the age that it is, ain't nobody going to sit at the helm for 10, 20, 30 years. So if you constantly recognize the shifting entertainment expectations of your audience and the fact that you can't flip a coin 13 times and come up with heads every time, it just don't work that way. Let the canon discussions continue, and I'm sure that's what we have conventions for the remainder of the next 18 to 24 months. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that one thing that Chris Eccleston's casting to begin with, that was such a massive change in the casting of the role itself, because he's, you know, northern, working class, different type accent, different type of vibe entirely than any other doctor, really. And I think for me, I had always like sort of, yeah, okay, if the doctor's a woman, I don't really care, that would be fine. You know, weirdly enough, when Eccleston himself was cast, and that was the one person where I'm like, I don't see it. But I see it like 5 minutes into the first episode. And I think that him taking the role was so incredibly vital for that exact reason. Even though it's another white dude, he's still opened up what the doctor could be beyond what it had been. Even more than, you know, Davison being young or McGann being younger, or, you know, McCoy being Scottish or whatever. Because it went away from this sort of like, you know, Edwardian professor kind of thing and said, nope, you could be anybody. And that I think was, you know, so to hear him say that he was happy about it, I was like, yeah.
And as we were saying before we even started recording, this is something that gets Eccleston to talk a little bit more about Doctor Who. That's fine, because we'll slowly wear him down over the course of the next. It's only going to take another 47 years, I'm telling you.
I can't wait till the 13 Doctor special where he's there.
Or at least a wax statue of him.
Exactly, yeah.
It'll be McCoy wearing an Eccleston mask.
Draping his arm over Matt Smith or something.
On stilts.
Yeah. Oh,
all right. Then we wanted to make sure that we included this just because it's something that had been available on various formats, but thankfully the world of YouTube puts these things nicely together for you. There was a lot of material that had to get left on the cutting room floor as a result, well, for various decisions, whether it was episode length, whether it was just flow and sequence, or whether it was just a matter of tonality of the scenes. There have been deleted scenes, additional footage that have been spliced together that you can now watch all the way through and get yourself essentially add on an extra 13 minutes to your series 10. So that's always a plus. So we'll make sure that we include those in the notes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But unfortunately, that's all the news that we've got this week. We're hitting that dry spell. You know, we've still got, 4 months before any new content comes out.
I think I saw this week that they're just counting the Mondays until the Christmas special right now, since it's too far away to count the days.
Yeah. It makes it easier when you just say, hey, 21 Mondays, guys. 21 sounds nice.
20 by the time you hear this.
Precisely, yeah. But we are in mid-con season, so at least we've got this good stuff coming out of conventions, and we'll continue to ride that out through until at least the November cycle. Andy, we'll see you at LI this year, correct?
Oh, yes. I'll be at LI Who this year. We got a lot of crazy stuff planned, us Cole Hill types. I honestly can't wait.
Perfect.
And if you're in the Boston area, you know that Karen Gillan and Matt Smith and John Barrowman are going to be at Boston Comic Con in a couple weeks, and I probably won't be. But
but I sent along my best, and they'll get my gift basket.
Yeah, seriously. I was just saying to Kara the other day, as I call her. Yeah.
And she said, please make sure that the basket has those summer sausages in them. I love those summer sausages so. Harry and David. Well, when we three meet again next week, we'll dip back into our classic rewatch as we are right now in the midst of season 8 with John Pertwee and Katie Manning. We will return to the Daemons. Full camp. Just gotta throw that on there. We will be joined, actually, by a friend of ours who you've actually heard us speak with previously, Jeremy Raddick, who you'll recognize from the Doctor Who movie 1996, will be joining us in studio talking classics as he loves to do. So looking forward to that one, too. But, Andy, in the interim, we've given you a few opportunities to slide in some sort of sidelong plugs as we go. How would people officially go to seek out Cole Hill AV Club?
The Cole Hill AV Club is available wherever fine podcasts are podcasted. Just search for Cole Hill AV Club, or we're one of the Doctor Who ones. And you can follow us on Twitter at Cole Hill Con, or on the Facebook page, which is actually probably the best place to check us. We tend to post most things up there. And I should mention this, that the next episode, hopefully, maybe, possibly, if I get all the stupid editing done, because this one's a bugbear. We did an end of season award show called the Jarvies, right? And the idea was we wanted to get a bunch of people like saying, you know, we could just list our like, oh, we loved this about series 10. We didn't love this. Or we could just ask everybody what they thought. And so we got people to vote in, you know, best guest hero category, best villain, best not a villain, but still a horrible person anyway, was a category we did. Had a lot of fun with it. Just did, you know, best episode, best OMG moment, couple of things. Mm-hmm. And we're cutting this together as if it is a legit MTV Movie Award style award show.
Okay.
So you're going to have like fake applause, music. Kira is presenting an award. Thank you so much for guesting on the show.
I channeled Will Smith. That's why I wanted to be Will Smith presenting.
Awesome. Yeah. So that should be coming out in, I'm going to say sometime this week, I hope. So definitely tune in for that. We had a lot of fun putting that together. And, you know, again, song parodies and such. We got a couple of them coming up. If you like The Rent, like the kids love Rent. We got a Rent parody for the kids. That should be good.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, thank you so much for spending the evening with us. I appreciate having you here.
Yeah, this was a ton of fun, guys. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, this has been episode 245 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, you know, I tried to add some background music to my life, but it just came up as like a slide whistle and a little crumb horn thing.
I thought it was all sad trombone.
it's
too real, dude.
Sad slide whistle. Wee-wee-wee-wee. It's amusing and depressing at the same time. Well, and this is Keir saying, I'm not content to just observe. I am a bold adventurer, though other Time Lords mock this Gallifreyan interventioner. I know in every matter that a Time Lord really should hold dear. I am the very model of a Gallifreyan buccaneer.
This is Haley saying goodbye. I can't top that.
It's like done.
And this is Andy saying that you're all going to be really disappointed when you watch the Daemons and the Master as you know, the funky vicar doesn't come out singing "I'm a soul man." There you go.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
I'll see.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Gallifrey Public Radio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.